welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Pyle. Have you ever wondered how the words you speak and the questions you ask affect those that you lead? How can the phrases that you use and your ability to use active listening affect the mentorship that you wish to provide? These are the questions we need to be asking ourselves if we wish to be good leaders. Now, let me take this moment to read you an excerpt from an article that I found very interesting. Imagine the commanding general visits a unit's motor pool to assess the readiness of their maintenance program. The general and their entourage walk past a series of tactical vehicles, and at one point the general says, "I wonder how many of these trucks are green and wonder how many are tan." Then, days later, someone presents the chief of staff with an elaborate cost estimate for a contract to repair every vehicle in the division. The staff spent considerable time and effort researching and producing something that the boss, never actually wanted or requested. How many of you out there have experienced something very similar to this situation? Well, today we're going to be exploring this concept of good leaders ask better questions, which is the title of the article that I just read you an excerpt from. This article was written by Lieutenant Colonel Ryan Cornell Desher in the publication From the Green Notebook and was recognized as one of the Chief of Staff of the Army's recommended articles for December 2023. This idea is not restricted to solely the sustainment community or any military community in that case. Anyone can take this concept and apply it to their lives. So today, I am joined with Lieutenant Colonel Ryan Cornell Desher and Command Sergeant Major Lamar Smith to explore and better understand how good leaders ask better questions and provide better mentorship overall. So our first guest is Lieutenant Colonel Ryan Cornell Desher, who has lived and breathed the Army life since he was born into an Army family, traveling the world. He commissioned as a transportation officer in 2007 from the University of Delaware with a Bachelor of Arts in English. He has served at Fort Bliss, Fort Drum, Fort Lee, Fort Carson, Fort Leavenworth, and the Pentagon with deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan. He also holds a Master's of Science in Adult Learning and Leadership from Kansas State University. He's a well-published author of a variety of different articles, and he currently serves as a battalion commander of the 71st Transportation Battalion here at Fort Lee, Virginia.
Thanks for having us, Garrett. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
So excited to have you here with us today, sir. And my other guest with me today is Command Sergeant Major Lamar Smith, who is a native of Warsaw, North Carolina. He joined the Army in 1997 as a 27 Mike multiple launch rocket system repairer. In 2002, he reclassed to an 8A Hotel cargo specialist. He has served at Fort Hood, Fort Eustis, Fort Story, Korea, recruiter in Fayetteville, North Carolina, Fort Bragg, and Fort Sill with deployments to Romania, Kuwait, Iraq, and Afghanistan. And currently he serves as the 71st Transportation Command Sergeant Major here at Fort Lee, Virginia.
Hey, good afternoon, sir. Thanks for having us.
So happy to have you here, Sergeant Major. So I know it's going to be a great episode we're about to get into. First, I kind of want to touch on the article I read an excerpt from. So, sir, what was it like being selected as a CSA recommended article of the month? Like, what was the story about how you kind of wrote this article even?
So, thanks, Garrett. It almost happened by accident. I wasn't specifically competing, trying to get selected, trying to earn any points or anything like that. So I was frustrated with the amount of time that we waste in a lot of our meetings, how some people will just kind of bluff or kind of BS their way through the material that they're briefing, and the leadership either doesn't know enough or doesn't care enough to ask the right questions. So sometimes it feels like we're just kind of going through the motions. Outside of that, there's the example I'd shared of saying, "I wonder how many of these vehicles are green," equals "let's repaint all the vehicles," which isn't actually something that the boss wanted. So it was just an itch that I had to kind of share that story, get it out there, and open a dialogue. I did this while I was assigned at the Pentagon. So I ended up getting invited to his office to actually meet with him face to face, which was pretty incredible and humbling as well. So a great experience, and it almost kind of happened by accident.
And so that's the thing when it comes to writing, like you're not writing for accolades. Like, you see something, you've experienced something. It's like, man, let me write about this. Let me tell this my story about this so that others can learn from this situation. So you experience this, where everybody under the sun, I feel like, has experienced something similar to that. Like, man, let's find a better way to do this. And I think just that idea, and that's just the pure reason why I was selected, is like, this needs to be highlighted to the entire community. So then we talked about that specific article. Is there anything else that, like, got you motivated into writing? So I know you've done a lot of articles now.
Right. I have. And usually whenever I write something, it's because I have a bug or an itch of some kind. And I just want to, instead of just shaking my fist at the sky and saying, oh, woe is me, it's, well, hey, let's, like, throw something out there, open a dialogue, share some of those ideas. And writing is important because it helps provide us with real intellectual clarity. As the team at From the Green Notebook always says on their podcast, how do I know what I think until I see what I say? So sometimes we have a lot of nebulous thoughts swimming around in our heads, but writing forces us to really structure and organize those thoughts. It helps us remember things. It helps us crystallize certain experiences. And it helps a little bit with resiliency, too, in my opinion. Sometimes ideas can seem a little bit less intimidating when you see them on paper in front of you. So I might say, hey, I am worried about X, or I am frustrated about X. And when I see it in front of me, it doesn't look so bad. And I maintain all my notebooks. So maybe a year later, I'll say, what was I really worried about a year ago? And I'll say, oh, yeah, that turned out to be nothing. So it's sort of a reminder of this too shall pass. But if I didn't create that inventory, if I didn't create that history by writing it down, then it might have just kind of drifted off into the ether.
And that's it. I like how you brought up, you know, From the Green Notebooks. It's true. Like, you know, writing all these things down, keeping those notes, it's something you can go back through and reference. That's why it's so good to be able to write things down. You're carrying around that notebook so that you can reference it later down the road, or even like years down the road, even like, wow, what did I do that, you know,
yep,
that other unit, another way you can look at it. So when it, now it comes to advice, I know we're going to be getting to a lot of advice today when it comes to leadership, but specifically let's look at writing real quick. What advice do you have for those getting into writing? So you've been published a lot, Sergeant Major, like coming from like, how do we get the NCOs to get into writing more? I'll take it from both perspectives.
First of all, you just got to do it. You got to start somewhere. There are folks out there like Captain Pyle or whoever our next Harding Fellow ends up being who can perhaps help you out. So maybe you have an idea, something that you want to write, but you're not quite sure what direction to send it to. So there are platforms and resources out there who aren't going to write it for you, but they can help point you in the right direction. Whether it's, I think this is something that needs to go in a professional journal, such as Army Sustainment. Maybe it needs to go in some kind of a leadership blog, whether that's something like From the Green Notebook, 3x5 Leadership, The Company Leader, Angry Staff Officer, and countless others that I'm forgetting about. And pretty much regardless of what platform you try to post to, their editing teams are all really good. I consider myself a pretty decent writer, but every time I try to get something published, they really force me to improve and step up my game even further. Also, think about, who are you really trying to influence? Who are you trying to reach? Whose minds are you trying to change? Whether you're just trying to share your own sort of lessons learned, or, hey, this is something that I got wrong, so learn from my mistake. Whether you have some best practices that you're trying to share. As long as you can make the argument that this is productive, it's constructive, it's going to contribute to the conversation, I'm pretty sure somebody's got a bite, but it all starts by getting started.
I said you just got to, you know, have that idea, get out there and get started. I think a lot of the great articles or great writing just starts with an idea. It's like, okay, I want to write something. And you bring up a good point. It's like, reach out to somebody to help you through the process. I mean, that's the whole point of why I exist as a writing fellow, is to help people through the writing process. So if you have an idea and you have nowhere to start, reach out to myself or any of the other Hardy fellows, and we can help you through getting it from an idea to publication. I've already done that with a few authors. It's come with an idea and we'll get you there.
Absolutely. So like you were saying, I think you just got to get out there and start writing. And then the first thing you need to find out is like, who is your audience? Like, who are you trying to reach? What do you want to write about? What are some of your topics? So in order to just get out there and do it, figure out what's your audience, what you want to talk about, what you want to write about, and do your research.
Now, let's truly dive into the focus for today's episode. You both have years of leadership experience and mentorship under your belts. Can you both elaborate more on, you know, how good leaders ask better questions?
Sure. So I'll start, and I'll really relate this to my prior experience that I have as an instructor. So the less that I talk, the better that the discussion is going to be. So if you can ask good questions, create the time and space for other people to jump in and have their voices heard. I mean, this is part of how we build trust. It's part of how we build cohesion as a team by involving all of our team members, regardless of what their rank is, because sometimes the most junior member of the room might have the best answer. But if I'm just never going to ask that person what they think and treat that person like they don't exist, then I'm potentially depriving myself of some options. So when you create the environment for thinking, you create an environment of respectful disagreement, you create an environment where every voice is heard, people are going to feel like they matter. And that requires a lot of humility as a leader. You have to be humble enough to admit when you don't know something. You have to be humble enough to ask, like, hey, Sergeant, help me understand. Like, what does this mean? Can you teach me? Or what do you think? And tying to that, I believe we demonstrate the quality of our thinking with the quality of the questions that we ask. And this is a two-way street also. So as the follower, as the person who has asked that question, you have to stop at the question mark. And what I mean by that is answer the question that you were asked, not the question that you wished that you were asked. So when the boss asks you, what time is it? Don't build him a clock. Don't explain the mechanical tension of the springs on your second and minute hands on the watch. Just answer the question. And if you don't have the answer, then admit you don't have the answer and find out and follow up. And that tends to create an environment of richer discussion.
So I'll add to that, as, like, when you talk to the game, like, writing, asking questions knows no ranks. Like, it doesn't matter what race you are, you should be able to, if you have a good idea, you know, get out there, present that idea. So many of our innovations throughout our military history have come from even the most junior ranks. We talk about, I know one of our experts says, when we talked about the history, especially in the quartermaster, that was, I believe it was a sergeant had the idea of putting, I can't remember what it's called, off the top of my head, on the front of the tank so the Shermans be able to get through the hedgerows when they break out of Normandy. Like, it's just simple ideas like that. When I was up in Alaska, a soldier had an idea for 3D printing this little device that would then clip onto your skis that you could make you more lethal to shoot off of. So if you have an idea, you know, get that idea out there.
We talk about how good leaders ask better questions. So, you know, I think it goes back a step prior to that. You know, as a good leader, you know, I got to know my subordinates. You know, so if I'm a good leader, I know my subordinates. So if I know my subordinates, you know, it comes with some active listening. You got to be able to listen. So if you know your subordinates and you know your soldiers and you know your formations, if you know them, if something is off and you're listening instead of talking, if you're listening, you figure out those triggers or what may be going on. And then if they ask the question, you got to know what question you're asking, what you're trying to find out, where you're trying to get to. It's like you have your current state or your operating environment, your OE. So you say, hey, I'm here now. I'm asking a question. I said, where I want to go to, how I'm going to get there. So I think it all goes back to ask a better question. I got to first listen to figure out what's going on. But before I'm listening, I should already know my subordinate, you know, because if you say, hey, good morning, how you doing? And the soldier usually says, good morning, Sergeant Major, I'm doing well. And, you know, so I know that soldier's demeanor. So the next day I go, hey, how you doing? And they'd be like, oh, I'm just here. So, you know, so knowing that, so that means that's a trigger, you know, so that means I know him. So now I'm listening. So those triggers are give off a vibe to make me go further. So I think it all goes back to listening.
And I like that, because it's that looking at almost like a two-way street between the leader and the subordinate, be able to have that environment that we've been trying to talk about, sir. You build that environment, that culture within the unit so that you can be able to ask the better questions because you know the people that you're leading, you know, so you know when they're off. And then it kind of gets after a lot of times they'll say, like, you got to be able to think with the same brain that your boss has. So when he or she says something, it's like, okay, now I know what they mean by that question. So it's knowing your people. So we're getting through and kind of asking these good questions. So, like, what would be some examples of good questions versus bad questions, so to speak?
So I'd offer. So some examples of good questions, and you can find all of these when you look at the elements and standards of critical thinking. So how can we verify that? How can we test that? Why do these conditions exist? What would you like to be able to do? that you currently aren't able to? What's something that you've changed your mind about? What's something that you doubled down on? What you don't want to do is ask a question that has judgment associated with it. So if one of my subordinates shows me a product and my question is, well, how is that relevant? And read between the lines, I'm basically telling them I think that it's irrelevant. So the question needs to be kind of an open invitation, inviting them into a dialogue, inviting them almost into this dance as we exchange ideas back and forth. So you don't want to ask questions that have judgment associated with them. And if you do, then just go ahead and give the judgment.
I would agree, sir. You know, so I don't think it's a bad question, you know, because any question is information, you know, so you don't want to ask questions. I would say that the critics have, like you say, sir, said, hey, you're asking a question. If you didn't want to know the answer, you know, don't criticize the question. So any question that's asked is not a bad question. Questions is information. So that's how I feel about it, sir.
Yeah, that's good.
Is there a way to, and that's kind of getting, you talked already, Sergeant Major, about some active listening. Sergeant, I don't know if you want to add some more to that on how we can truly tie in some active listening to ask better questions.
Sure. So active listening builds trust, but you have to be very intentional and deliberate about how you do it. So this surprises a lot of people when I say this, but there are 6 levels of listening, and we don't start active listening until level 4. So level 1 is ignoring. I'm not listening to you at all. Level 2 is judging, and we tend to get stuck here a lot. So when you apply some kind of a label to somebody, right, whether it's somebody's gender, somebody's race, somebody's political party, whatever it is, when you are judging and labeling people, effectively, you're saying, I've already decided this person is wrong before they've even opened their mouth, and you're not going to be able to work to the center. Your third level is teaching, where I'm not really listening. I'm just waiting for you to finish talking so I can explain to you how it really is the right way, and I've already made up my mind. So when you get to level 4, this is when we actually start active listening, and instead of being judgmental, we are curious. And we will say things like, tell me more, help me understand. When you get to the 5th level, that's when you start paraphrasing and giving people their words back to them. Because sometimes message sent doesn't always equal message received. So I'll say things like, hey, Garrett, what I heard you say is ... And then when you get to the 6th level, which is where we want to try to strive to be, is where you also have some empathy. So you'll say, hey, Garrett, here's what I heard you say. And here's how I sense that you're feeling about it. And now what you're doing is, it's not really about who's right or wrong, winning and losing. It's just about showing empathy for the other person's position and working to the center. And the last point I would offer on good listening skills and how that builds trust within our organizations is tying to Sergeant Major's point about knowing your people. You need to retain what people share with you and be able to give their words back to them. So if I'm conducting some leadership by wandering around and I'm checking on soldiers, seeing how everything's going, you know, how are you doing? How's the family? Stuff like that. If somebody shares a concern with me or something noteworthy, like, hey, my daughter's got a big soccer game tonight, follow up in a couple of days. Like, hey, how'd your daughter's soccer game go? Or if somebody says, oh, I'm really nervous. I've got to take my dog to the vet. I don't know what's wrong. Follow up in a few days and say, hey, how's your dog doing? Did you figure out what the deal was? I mean, that is hugely powerful when you're able to do that and actually retain what people share with you. And this is a learned behavior. It doesn't come naturally to many of us. But people are usually surprised and almost a little flattered when they can tell that you care enough to remember that and then share it with them again. Because sometimes if people share their concerns and you never retain it and never follow up with them, sometimes it can create the impression that, well, maybe did they really care, or were they asking just to like check a block of some sort?
Well, I mean, that's how you build family. It's how you build that trust, cohesion in your unit. And that's one of the things that I really highlight or preach when I was in company command, was like, we have to be able to, you know, build that family. And it comes with, just like you described, sir, asking these questions and then following up. And that's getting after active listening, as you said, Sergeant Major, and knowing your people. Because then you know, okay, I'm not just following this person because I have to. I'm following this person because I want to, because you've built that connection. Be like, I trust this person with my life now because I know they trust me. It just comes with active listening, asking those questions, you can build that. And I liked how you kind of outlined that in these six different levels. Like, while I've understood and known these different things, I never put them in that context before. So it's really cool how you did that for the listeners and just really painted that picture.
Hey, sir, so and one thing you said about that, those levels of listening, right? And so in order to do all those things, that leader has to be present.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be present in the organization. And like you said, with leadership by one in the round, that's key. That's when you find out all things about the organization and you build that trust. But the first thing you have to do, you have to be present. You have to have presence as a leader. It's a physical training, PT formation, walk around the shops, motor pool Monday. So it always goes back to presence. So in order to do anything active, listening, find out about the organization, the leader has to be present.
Exactly. We don't need any more desk warriors.
Negative.
So as we kind of transition now to the mentorship side, because I know these kind of all just kind of tie in. I know before we even get into the tying in mentorship to asking better questions, let's better define what mentorship is to the audience. Sir?
Okay. So this is not just my opinion. This is straight out of ADP 6-22, Army Leadership and the Profession. So many of us get this term wrong, and they conflate it with other actions. So when I see an NCOER that says, Sergeant Pyle mentored 20 soldiers on marksmanship techniques at the rifle range. No, he did a good thing. He did some training and coaching, but that wasn't mentoring. When your boss sits you down and says, all right, I'm going to teach, coach, mentor you, like that should probably make you cringe because they're basically doing three different things at the same time, which suggests that none of them is very good. So mentorship, if you ask someone to be your mentor, or if as the mentor, you ask someone to be your protege, I would also like to get away from the word mentee, right? It's mentor and protege. If I teach a student, they're not my teachee. But if you try to create this bonding between a mentor and a protege, what you're really asking is for a relationship to be established. It's voluntary and it's mutual. So it is something that we both want. We are both going to get something out of this. So, Garrett, if I asked you to become my mentor, I'm asking you because I recognize you are a person of greater experience. I trust you. I respect you. And I would see value in your insights. If you agree to take me on as a protege, it means that you see some potential in me that is worth investing in. And it's very rewarding to plant those seeds and see people flourish. I would also offer, your mentor does not have to outrank you. Your mentor could be a peer. Your mentor could be subordinate to you. My whole career, NCOs have mentored me, even though I, as a commissioned officer, outranked them. That just means they have greater experience in a certain area. It's also important, I believe, to create additional opportunities if you're willing to mentor and be mentored by people who don't look like you. That's part of how we continue to build trust within our organizations. I also think it's okay to have multiple mentors because it's personal, but it's not a marriage. So maybe I will bounce an idea or a question or a concern off of multiple mentors and get multiple opinions and schools of thought. And my last point here is it's important that your mentor not be in your current chain of command. It's okay if they're an old boss or something like that, but to really have that full degree of trust and transparency with your mentor, you need to be able to share whatever's on your mind to include concerns about, hey, I'm not sure how long I want to do this, you know, military career or whatever it is. That's not the kind of thing you want to say openly to like your rater or your senior rater, because that might put your next evaluation at risk.
So one of the things I wanted to highlight or kind of question for you on that, sir, is so you have a mentor and not in your chain of command. What happens if that mentor then becomes part of your chain of command? How do you handle that?
Yeah, so I think it would really just require you to sit down and effectively redefine the terms of the relationship. Understand it's probably always going to be there will be a little bit of almost professional distance that you're going to have to maintain in that instant. But ideally, you're both mature enough to understand that, hey, circumstances have changed. You know, we still are kind of a mentor and protege relationship, but Maybe we're going to have to kind of edit down some of the topics that we talk about, because as of right now, like, I am your boss and I am your raider, or whatever it is. And then once it's time for one of you to depart the organization, you can kind of hit the reset button on that relationship.
And I think it's just good to bring up because, you know, your army is small.
Sure.
but it's important to have, as you brought out, multiple mentors, because if you stay like, this person might be mentoring you in this area, another person might be mentoring you in that area. And then it's good to be able to bounce ideas off different people, because everyone has different life experiences, different ways of looking at things. So it's good to have that different perspective so you can make a well-informed decision between all the different wisdom that people are pouring into you.
Yes, sir. So for the mentor piece, you know, something you said, sir, about relationships, along with the teach, coach, mentor, develop, train, educate, empathize, and sympathize. Because every day, you're out there mentoring somebody, you know, and you might not even know it. You know, and so as a senior leader or a leader, you know, just by the way you operate and throughout your everyday work, you know, you might have a soldier or a private or NCO and say, hey, man, one day I want to be like Sergeant Smith or Sergeant Cornell DeSher, because, you know, they want to emulate you in some type of way. So you got to be careful what you do out there when you walking around or talking to soldiers, because, you know, you're mentoring somebody every day. And you don't even know it. You know, sometimes you say, I'm going to be their mentor. They might not want you to be their mentor.
Yeah.
But what you do every day matters. Whatever you do every day, it matters. I have a mentor, Command Sergeant Major, retired Bernard Smalls. And he said, Smith, he said, if you're going to say it. He said, if you say it right. If you say it right, you say it all the time. So that goes back to whatever you're doing out there, those soldiers, or NCOs or officers, they're going to see it. They might like it, and they want to say, hey, can you be my mentor? And then you got to be honest with them, too. Like you said, going outside your present chain of command or different MOS, somebody's going to be fair and impartial.
Sure.
Sometimes they're going to tell you what's needed here, now what you want to hear. So that's how I felt about mentorship.
So I think that's a great point you brought up, Sergeant Major. It's like people are always going to be watching you. If it's good, bad, or the ugly, because you might be doing something completely wrong or bad, someone's going to be like, I do not want to be like that person. Or it's like, man, if they get away with that, I guess I can. So it's a great point that people are always watching you. So sometimes mentorship, I know it's sort of we talked about, hey, has that mentor-protege relationship, but people are still watching you and you're giving mentorship off without even realizing it or having that relationship established. And then another point was this relationship between officer and NCO and having that mentorship. Because I know when I came in as a second lieutenant, my platoon sergeant did a fantastic job. You know, Sergeant Clark and then also Sergeant Cab, two great NCOs that helped me out, 88 Hotels actually. And I still have a great relationship with them today. Because I kind of want to look at that from your perspective, both of your perspectives on, you know, you got your platoon leader, platoon sergeant, all the way up to battalion commander, command sergeant major, having that. So what does that look like?
So one, I wrote an article about this, which was called You and Your NCO for the Company Leader. So from my perspective, it's something that's very unique to the United States and really specifically the Army and to an extent in the Marines, I would say as well, based on what I've seen, that distinguishes us from other armies and other countries around the world where there it's very officer centric. You got one officer doing all the thinking, all the leading, and everyone else just kind of sitting around waiting to be told what to do. So our NCO Corps is really part of the secret sauce of what I think makes the U.S. Army so great. So you have this dynamic where the officer is the person who has credentials, but the NCO is the person who has that experience and that wisdom that's earned with like real experience and hardship. So it's a tricky dynamic to get right. And I say this just as an officer who didn't have prior enlisted time. So really the officer has to be humble enough to ask for help, to admit what they don't know, to also use their sergeants more and to delegate more, because most of them want to do more. But the officer still has to understand that at the end of the day, it's their name on the line and they're the one who's assuming the risk associated with some of the decisions they would make. The one thing I think that changes, and it took me a while to catch up with this, is that as you rise through the ranks, the level of experience becomes much more equivalent. So in most cases, you think about a brand new second lieutenant, fresh out of college, they have that grizzled platoon sergeant who's older than them, more experienced than them. And it's usually still pretty similar at the company commander and first sergeant level most of the time. But once you get up to the battalion level, or for sure the brigade and GO levels, you become much closer in age, and you're much closer, much more roughly equivalent in your years of experience. So the dynamic changes a bit. But even if your experience is more equivalent, I would still very much see that NCO as a mentor. And Sergeant Major Smith has certainly been a mentor to me, even though he's also my battle buddy and my partner in crime, so to speak. And the one other point I would just offer is, no matter what echelon you're at, it's very important to be unified as a command team. You're going to disagree on things. You're not going to see every single thing the same way. But what's key is that when you have those disagreements, they happen behind closed doors. And when the door opens, I mean, you're one voice, one heartbeat, and there's no daylight in between you. Because if there is, it's usually very obvious. Soldiers can tell, and you can't hide it and you can't fake it.
The relationship goes back to what we talked about earlier. Everything is tying in together now. You're talking about asking those questions, or what questions you need to ask, and listening. So with that relationship, you know, you got to be able to listen to what each other's saying, and got to ask the questions. Hey, sir, ma'am, like, what do you want? What are we going to do? And if you ever think about a general officer, usually when they're giving a speech or a presentation, they all go back and relate to their first platoon sergeant. It could have been 30 years ago. And they always remember that person. Sometimes it may be a issue when that guy or gal, you know, might have been, wasn't so great, or what was great. But anyway, you know, they have a story to tell. If you think about it, it usually develops that person into that leader that they are today. That first relationship that they have with that non-commissioned officer. And, you know, so another thing is the commander hit on with other countries. You know, I just came from UCOM, and I was able to sit down with senior leaders from other countries, and they were all interested in, you know, the NCO Corps for the Army, and, you know, in how do we do it? How do we do it? And I talked to my business CSM. He said, hey, Smith, Sergeant Major Smith, is about, hey, we have a seat at the table, right? You know, we have that relationship. You know, say, hey, you do this, I'm going to do that, you know, and we were able to articulate, you know, what's going on and carry out the commander's intent, or the OIC intent, or whatever level we're at. So I think the relationships matter, and that's why we want the best forces in the world, because the NCO office relationship is great, you know. So that's my take on it, sir.
Oh, I appreciate both those takes on it, because I know you've got another article out here I got to go read now, but it's just, there's a lot of good writings out there, but building that relationship between the officer and the NCO is, it's really, I can look at it as, that's going to make or break the unit, because it starts there. If that team is broken, or that team is not functioning correctly, as you said, sir, it's, everyone can see it, and it's going to just, almost like it's going to be a cancer in the unit that's going to affect everything. So it's so pivotal that you start a strong foundation with that battle buddy team.
Yes, agreed.
So one of the last things I'll kind of look at is, how can we, you know, provide better mentorship to those that we lead?
So for me, I think the hardest part of mentorship is the initiation of the relationship. There's some vulnerability that's associated with it. Whether I ask you to mentor me, or I say, hey, I would like to take you under my wing as a protege. I mean, it's almost like asking someone on a date, or like telling your significant other that you love them for the first time, and you're not quite sure what you're going to hear back. So there's a little bit of vulnerability associated with putting yourself out there. So the initiation of the relationship, I think, is the hardest part. So that's a way that we can provide better mentorship, is by providing more access to it. So related to that, one, as Sergeant Major said, some of us might have a mentor or be a mentor to someone else right now and not even know it. And maybe there's somebody that you already go to really frequently for advice, and just someone that you trust and respect, and that you have like interpersonal chemistry with. So maybe it's just a question of actually formalizing and acknowledging that relationship. I also think that if we can build trust through approachability, that can also make it easier to initiate that mentor-protege relationship. So part of being approachable and how we build trust through approachability is, it doesn't just mean that we declare ourselves approachable and expect people to come to us. We need to be willing to come to them too. As Sergeant Major talked about the importance of presence, being there, that leadership by wandering around. The other example I like to use is in terms of like some of the decorations and personal items, like personal effects that we keep inside some of our offices, right? So maybe you're going to go speak with some superior officer or an NCO who outranks you, and you're very intimidated by them, and you were just going to go talk to them about something work-related. And then you notice something like up on their wall, whether it's a sports team that you like, or maybe you see like a fishing rod and you're an avid fisherman yourself, whatever it is, you realize, hey, I have something else in common with this person outside of the Army. And maybe that's the in that you need to initiate the relationship, because now you know that you're going to have something in common with this person and you're going to have some kind of rapport. And the other point I would offer on how we build trust is, when we're asking for leaders that we can trust, what we're really asking for most of the time is consistency. So do you walk the talk? Does the audio match the video? Is there any daylight between what you say and what you do? So, I mean, to Sergeant Major's point about presence, like if you say PT is important to you, then you ought to be doing it yourself. If you say maintenance is important to you, then you ought to be in the motor pool. But it can be more nuanced than that. It can also be about like follow through. So part of it is sharing what people share with you, like I talked about earlier, give people their words back to them. But it can also be how you prioritize different things. So the example I always share with my team is, we can't call ourselves leaders who take care of soldiers if their awards are always late. But if you get the environment right and you create the climate for thinking, for trust, for transparency, I think that just the amount of mentors that you're going to create is just going to explode.
This is an interesting, you know, topic, you know, so how can we provide better mentorship to those that we lead? And you mentioned, sir, about the initiation, you know, that's the first part of it. But then we got to understand, where does that person or organization, like, where do they want to go? Like, what's their end state? Mm-hmm. So we say, hey, I want to go be the Sergeant Major of the Army, you know, or the Chief of Staff of the Army. Okay. All right. That's the way ahead, you know. So where are we at now? In that process, and so, you know, how are we going to get there? So what are the tools? So as a mentor, you got to be able to figure out, articulate, and get certain tools, and how I'm going to cultivate. You talked about cultivation, sir, you know, and the climate. So we talk about this all the time, right? So we can't plant seeds. You know, now I'm going to go back before I get started. You know, you're not going to get everybody. You know, they might choose, but you're not going to get them. So, but in order to plant a seed, you got to first provide the climate or the soil. You got to cultivate the soil in order for the seed to go into. So once you provide that climate of the organization or that soil, cultivate it and get ready for planting. So, okay, now we're going to plant the seed. But at the same time, we got to go back and keep watering. You know, I'm an old farmer from North Carolina. You know, so that's how I get my ideas across based off farming. You know, the farmer, he got to know what to plant, how to plant, what to sow, when to sow. So, you know, we got to figure out where we're going to, how we're going to get there, when we're going to plant the seed. Now we got to go back and water it. It might not come up right away. It might come up 10 years from now. But as long as we plant it, we'll go back, cultivate it, water it, give it fertilizer, go take those weeds out. And then one day, it'll sprout up. And guess what? It's going to give back. It's going to give back to the range. It's going to drop some more seed. Guess what? And they got to go back and continue the process of cultivate, nurture, water, de-weed, insecticide, pesticide. So that's how I felt about mentorship. You know, you're not going to get them. What's the way ahead and where we're going to?
Like you kind of think you alluded to is sometimes you might plant that seed and somebody else might be watering that seed. Because, mm-hmm. You know, we're always changing out. You might have just a small interaction with somebody. You planted a seed in their life and it will just, as you said, stay dormant for a little bit, but then it gets watered and it grows. So it's all about looking at, like, people are always watching. You've got to be able to lead by example in everything that you do. Like you said, if you care about maintenance, you better be out in the motor pool. And I'll just show by example. So to close out, I know we gave a lot of wisdom, a lot of advice today, but it's something I ask every guest that comes on the show is, what advice do you have for the sustainment community?
So to tie it all in, you know, for the sustainment community and lowly stations, I would say that today's war is not tomorrow's war. You know, so as we transform and contact on a daily basis, it's a continuous process. We have to understand from the NCO point of view that we got to be brilliant at the basics. You know, we talk about being brilliant at the basics, being technical and technically proficient. with that being said, being brilliant at the basics means stronger soldiers make strong soldiers. You know, strong soldiers make stronger squads, and a strong squad wins our nation's war. So, you know, we got to be a brilliant base what we're doing, technically and tactically proficient, because as we transform in contact, you know, what happened yesterday might not happen today. So we got to be agile, we got to be proficient, and we got to be able to adjust at a moment's notice. So, like I say, winning matters, and I'll be all you can be.
All right. So the big thing I would offer is the importance of taking ownership of your own self-development, right? So there's the different domains of leader development, right? You have your academic domain, your institutional domain, what you learn in the schoolhouse. There's your operational domain of what you learn on the job, all your firsthand experience from all the units that you get assigned to. But then there's the self-development domain. And that's something that you really have to own. Like whoever your mentor is, like your mentor can't want it for you. You have to be the one who wants it. So that means everything from like reading, studying, independent study, studying history, studying doctrine, being curious, and just continuing to gather tools and gather ideas. And when I say reading, I don't just mean read doctrine, although that matters too. It's important to study leaders who've come before you, study military history, military operations, study how logistics has won or lost wars, because history tends to, if it doesn't necessarily repeat itself, at least it rhymes. Because a pet peeve that I have is when somebody says that they're an outside the box thinker, but they've never read a history book a day in their life. And you can't think outside the box if you haven't first defined and understood the box and you don't even know what's in it. Because some of these ideas that you think are so brilliant and so innovative, like they might have actually been tried before. So take some time to figure out what's in the box before you figure out what's outside of it. And you've really got to take ownership of that yourself. I also think it's important just to study a variety of topics and through a variety of means, whether you're reading physical books, listening to audiobooks, or listening to podcasts, just like this one. So find ways to combine developmental activities with non-developmental activities. So if you're doing something that's like a relatively mindless routine activity, like driving to work, washing dishes, cutting grass, putting laundry away, walking the dog, whatever it is, like maybe use that time to like listen to a podcast or listen to an audiobook, whatever it is. And even if it's only a few minutes at a time, over the weeks, over the months, those minutes add up. And I believe there's a kind of a compound interest effect that takes place. So really take ownership of your own self-development.
Well, you have definitely had a lot of amazing wisdom and advice from both you gentlemen today. So just really want to thank you both for coming on the show. I know we focus most of our content on sustainment operations here, but it's good to be able to expand on topics that affect everyone. And well, and truly the entire world can benefit from having these leadership conversations. Your wisdom today in this, and be able to ask better questions, how to be able to actually provide mentorship, defining mentorship, will truly have an impact. So I know there's always good cards and letters. So where can people find you at if they wish to have any follow-up questions?
Yeah, you can find me on Global. Since both of my parents retired, I'm the only Cornell Day share that's left in the Army. I do have a hyphenated last name, but when you look me up on Outlook, it's all just crunched together as one word.
If anyone needs any advice or any questions, you can find me on the Global.
Once again, thank you both so much for just taking the time to meet with me today. It's been a lot of fun. We learned a lot. I know I'll personally take these concepts we discussed so I can strive to be a better leader every single day. So thank you very much.
Thanks for your time, sir.
Yeah. Thanks, Garrett. Glad to be here. Happy to help.
Today's conversation shouldn't end here. Use this as a leadership professional development with your team. See how you can strengthen each other's leadership abilities. Try asking each other better questions and ask for feedback so that you can become a better leader to those around you. I would also like to announce that next week we'll be starting a new mini-series focused on the trends at the brigade and below from each of the main combat training centers, or CTCs. For the next 4 weeks, we'll hear from each of the main CTCs about the trends that they're seeing and how sustainment units operate. If you want to learn how to be successful and for your unit to be most lethal, then be sure to check out this new mini-series. You don't want to miss it. But that is all we have, folks. As always, sustainment leaders start here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation.
please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.